com.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. I pause there. This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel and Hershey's for Heroes, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I always have to start off, Mr. Yoram Edinger. Do I call you doctor?
No, I'm not a doctor.
You're not a doctor. Neither am I. I always start out by saying, it needs to be said, thank you to America's Web Radio that brings the truth of the Jewish state to the grassroots of the United States.
Amen.
These guys are, I tell you, Yoram, these guys are great. They came to me over a year ago, and they said, we like what we're seeing in Israel, and we want to know the truth. We want to know the truth about that country. Now, you know, we're not getting too much from the media about Israel's greatness and how most of the media wouldn't have half the products that they do if it weren't for the Jewish people here in Israel creating, inventing, reinventing. It's amazing. So we don't hear much in the media. And that's why Insight to Israel exists, so that we can fight. Listen, I don't coddle folks. You know, I don't stand next to the leftist media and say, you know, you have to tell the truth. Now, it's not fair. It's not right. No. We have to fight against them. And people don't like the word fight anymore. You know? It gives them, makes them feel uncomfortable, because then they have to move and be active. And now they're responsible for the truth they know. And not just responsible in this life, but before the Almighty. When you stand in the light of eternity, before the Almighty, you are responsible for what you did and did not do. The sin of omission and commission. So, with that being said, I am thankful that I get to tell the truth about the amazing people here in Israel. The love, the compassion, the helping hand that they've been to Hershey's for Heroes, the Insight to Israel, to me personally, and what the Jewish people here in Israel do for the world. It's amazing. So I want to thank all the guys at America's Web Radio for what they do. And I also want to say thank you to others, Yoram Edinger, for giving to Hershey's for Heroes. I was just at the Kotel, the Western Wall, the other day. 150 chocolate bars to a Galani graduating class. And the shock. I actually had a gentleman, this lets you see, sir, and chime in anytime you want. But I actually had a falafel, which is a high-ranking officer. I don't know. How do you say it in Hebrew?
It's a major.
A major, yes.
It's a major.
He was a major in the Army. And he asked me, he said, I have a whole box of Hershey's for Heroes from different people all over the country. And not only, look, does this administration, I'm speaking for Insight to Israel, make policies that aid and abet the enemy of Israel and the United States, but also on top of that, the media, the people here are listening to what the media says, and it's not good for Israel. It's not a positive.
Well, the issue is not whether it's good for Israel, but
right.
For your listeners, whether it's good for America.
Right.
And for instance, here we are in Jerusalem, which is the capital of the Jewish people, the capital of Israel, as documented by the Bible, as documented by some 4,000 years of history.
Right.
And at that time, the U.S., the leader of the free world, is boycotting Jerusalem. Here we are celebrating in a few days the Jerusalem Day,
which is exciting,
to commemorate the reunification of Jerusalem. And the U.S. administration does not recognize even the Jewish part of Jerusalem,
right,
the pre-67 part of Jerusalem, as an integral part of the sovereign Jewish state. In fact, the U.S. Congress passed a law which calls for the establishment of a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem, which amazingly enough hasn't been the case since 1948, because the U.S. Government, their leader of the free world, has been deterred by rogue regimes and therefore has refrained from establishing its embassy in Jerusalem. But under the threats by Arab regimes, Muslim regimes, the U.S. decided to kowtow to those threats, and it has an embassy in Tel Aviv, which is not the capital of the Jewish state,
right,
the Jewish people.
Right.
Congress passed that law back in 1995, but there is a waiver in that law which allows the president every 6 months to postpone the relocation of the embassy to Jerusalem.
What's the point?
Under the false, and I emphasize false, contention that this would pose a national security threat to the U.S. And mind you,
wow,
we're not talking about establishing a U.S. embassy necessarily in in eastern Jerusalem, which was reunited to Jerusalem after the Six Days War. We're talking establishing an embassy in the pre-67 part of Jerusalem,
wow,
which has always been part of the Jewish state. But the Department of State of the United States, and therefore the White House, the President, do not recognize Western Jerusalem to be part of Israel. Now, the damage to America's posture is very, very obvious, because a U.S. which does not act according to its law,
right,
due to threats by rogue regimes, does reveal itself as susceptible to pressure, and therefore it erodes its own posture of deterrence, which is the most cardinal element of America's national security. Moreover, to assume that the Muslim world, the Arab world, is going to rise up against the U.S. asserting its obligation to have an embassy in a capital of a friendly country such as Israel,
right,
is absurd, because the U.S. is way, way too important for any Muslim or Arab regime than to cut the ties between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Abu Dhabi or Dubai or Jordan or Egypt because of an embassy in Jerusalem. I remember the same voices urging Israel to refrain from bombing the Iraqi nuclear reactor back in 1981.
Right.
And the warning was, should you bomb the nuclear reactor in Iraq, it will cause, it will trigger an all-out Muslim war against Israel. Not only wasn't there a war against Israel after we bombed the nuclear reactor, but under the radar screen, there was a flood of thank you notes from Arab regimes, Muslim regimes, such as Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Bahrain and Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Oman and Egypt, thanking Israel to rid the region of such a threat to stability as was inherent in a potentially nuclear Iraq.
Wow.
The same thing applies to the U.S., in my mind, need to relocate its embassy to Israel's capital, Jerusalem. A U.S. which once again asserts itself as a country which defies threats rather than succumbing to threat would assert its own power projection, posture of deterrence, and therefore would be much more essential, much more productive to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Kuwait, and the rest of the oil-producing countries in the Persian Gulf. Moreover, when we have a U.S. refraining from relocating its embassy to Jerusalem, we only fuel further Arab radicalization. We only therefore intensify terrorism in the area. We undermine stability in the area, and that obviously erodes vital American interests. And therefore, it seems to me that anybody who is listening to us should pick up the phone and call his or her own congressman or congresswoman, the two senators from one's states, urging them to act in favor of the relocation of the American embassy to the capital of the Jewish state.
I agree.
And therefore to serve vital American interests.
You know what, sir? I'll tell you. I'm glad that you said all that. And you're absolutely correct, because I will say, as an American, the cowardice of not just every president that has not adhered to that bill that was passed. First of all, it's a waste of paper when you put on there every 6 months the president has to write to reevaluate. That's a total waste of paper. It was a waste of voting time, I feel like, for as long as I worked in politics and knowing how the Congress and the Senate work. Of course, you would know that much better than I do, as far as like the ins and the outs, and I know how it works on the surface. First of all, I wonder how we build an embassy, because we're flat broke. The United States government is completely broke. But I think that even if we had an apartment which represented our embassy in Jerusalem, I think it's vital. You said there's nothing else for me to say.
There's no need to build, and as you just indicated, there are American interests, structures in Jerusalem.
Right.
And any one of them could become tomorrow an American embassy. In addition, there is a dedicated budget in the budget of the Department of State just for that. But that budget has not been spent because of the Department of State's own policy of appeasement towards the Arab world. And again, it has been the Department of State which has led the fight, the battle against the implementation of the law of the land.
No, you're
and
right.
This is the same Department of State which did not want a Jewish state back in 1948.
Right.
It's the same Department of State which imposed or convinced an American president to impose a military embargo on the Jewish state, which fought for its survival in 1948, while the British supplied arms to Egypt and Jordan and Iraq in their pursuit of the annihilation of the Jewish state. It's the same Department of State which appeased and cuddled Saddam Hussein until the day Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait back in August of 1990. It's the same Department of State which courted Ayatollah Khomeini when he was in exile in Paris against the Shah of Iran, who was America's number one ally in the whole of the Middle East. It was the Department of State which stabbed the Shah in the back. It was the same Department of State which embraced Yasser Arafat, the arch-terrorist, as a messenger of peace. It was the same Department of State that urged the U.S. to allow Hamas to participate in the Palestinian election and caused suddenly the surge of Hamas terrorist organizations within Palestinian politics. And it is the same Department of State which has referred to the Arab tsunami on the Arab street as a Facebook revolution,
right,
as a transitioning of the Arab street towards democracy.
Yeah.
And time after time, that Department of State has been wrong and wronger and wrongest, as it has been on the issue of Jerusalem. Many people on Capitol Hill refer to the Department of State as a UN-like institution within the American government, and I heard many times from American legislators eagerly awaiting the Department of State to establish a unit on behalf of American interests in foggy bottom. Maybe again it's time for the American people, American legislators, to lead the way,
right,
rather than follow when it comes to the issue of Jerusalem, which, by the way, is very much an American issue. If you only observe the spelling of Jerusalem, you will note that the heart of the spelling of Jerusalem is USA.
Wow.
It tells us something.
Wow, wow. You know what, sir? You're right, because I'll tell you, the American people, not just, look, if Israel fails, the United States fails. That's a fact. Yesterday, call it coincidence if you want, but yesterday at the same time that the Pope was about to speak in Bethlehem, the One World Trade Center, did you read it? Was struck by lightning at the same time. Now, interestingly enough, on top of the World Trade Center, the One World Trade Center, which is pretty amazing, because we had two buildings, made it one, and we call it the One World Trade Center. Now, some people may not be smart enough to read into that, but I think it says a lot about the direction the United States is going. I think it says a lot that when we put a Muslim spire, do the reading on it. A spire is what goes atop a minaret. And now we have a spire, an Islamic spire. Some people don't want to call it that. They're afraid of being politically correct or not seeing things for what they are. But we have one of those on top of the World Trade Center. Now, they couldn't build a mosque near Ground Zero, but they do have a spire on top of the World Trade Center.
Well, it seems to me that the key issue is to avoid any fog when it comes to worldview, to
right,
assessment, because if you do not conduct yourself with clarity when it comes to worldview and ideology,
right,
how can you have clarity when it comes to operations? And certainly at this stage, as we have for centuries now, but especially at this stage, we are talking about a clash of civilization.
Absolutely.
Between not only rogue regimes in general and the free,
right,
world, but we're talking about a clash of civilization between Muslim regimes and Muslim organizations, which are at the top of the Islamic terror onslaught on the democratic world or the free world. And certainly the U.S. rightly is regarded as the top target of anyone who wants to assault the free world. As we talk right now, there are scores, maybe even hundreds, of sleeper cells of terrorism, not only in Europe, but also on the U.S. own mainland.
Right.
They are awaiting
a
green light for operation. The problem with the lack of clarity, has to do with the lack lack of comprehension about this clash and the tendency to assume in a very oversimplified, gullible manner that there are three religions of peace, and Islam is just as much as a religion of peace as are Christianity and Judaism.
Right.
For instance, people who espouse that view note that the word, the Hebrew word of shalom, is salam in Arabic, peace in English. And they don't realize there is a fundamental difference between salam in Arabic and shalom in Hebrew, or peace in English. When you aspire for shalom in Hebrew, as the word suggests, shalom, the core of the word shalom, means shalem, namely totality, comprehensive nature. Namely, when you aspire peace agreement, this is totality of relationship. This is the most comprehensive, and by the way, shalem,
it's
totality,
deep. It's deep.
It's also the ancient name of Jerusalem. It's also a synonym for the word of God. Shalom is one of the synonym of God. On the other hand, salam, its root has to do with Islam. Namely, it's only when a non-Muslim accepts the dominance of Islam, only then the non-Muslim, the so-called infidel, is worthy of peace. But while accepting the dominance of Islam and the dini stature of the infidel, namely dini, a second-rate, protected minority, those are not similar terms. Those are very different terms, which underline the essence of the clash of civilizations.
You know, that's amazing you say that, because right now, in the United States, listen, you guys know this better than anyone. That's why you give most of your intelligence, you share it with the United States.
Well, not only do we share it, but talking with top members of the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees on Capitol Hill, you could hear, whenever you speak with them, that the scope of intelligence received by the U.S. from the Jewish state exceeds the scope of intelligence received by the U.S. from all NATO countries combined.
Wow.
Now, this is scope of intelligence primarily about planned Islamic terrorist acts against the U.S. on the U.S. mainland and outside the U.S. Mainland. It has to do with intelligence on capabilities by rivals of the U.S. and enemies of the U.S. And one could ask, how can you quantify in terms of dollars the value of such intelligence, value of intelligence which has spared the U.S. maybe one or two more September 11.
Right.
Are we talking about $100 million? Are we talking about...
How are you, sir?
Are we talking about $1 billion?
Who's that?
That's the chairman of the Efrat Regional...
He was on the radio council. Show. He was on Inside Theater. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
By the way, he's very good for interview. He has many...
He was on. I had him on.
Oh, you had him on?
Ah, I had him on back in December.
Because he has many former Americans who reside now in Efrat.
Yeah.
He's
the mayor.
And he is there on the front line.
Yes, he is. He is. Wow, wow. Yeah, I'm glad that we saw him. Anyway, go ahead, sir, because you're telling some good stuff here.
Well, what I'm saying is that Israel is not just another ally. Israel is not just a source of unique, irreplaceable, very rare source of intelligence vital for the U.S. national security. Israel is both spiritually as well as economically and militarily the beachhead of the U.S. in a vital region for the U.S. economy and U.S. national security, and weakening that that beachhead means weakening the U.S. itself. Strengthening that beachhead advances American interest, and that has become that much more important and vital nowadays when the U.S. goes through dramatic cuts in its own defense budget. How is the U.S. going to make up for a shorter strategic hand in the Middle East, if not through its own beachhead, otherwise known as Israel? You take the U.S. defense industries competing in the global competition while benefiting from the most important, the most effective battle tested laboratory, otherwise known as Israel. We are using over 1,000 American military systems. We share with over 1,000 American defense contractors lessons drawn by Israel, operating those systems, maintaining them, and repairing them. Sharing it with the manufacturer is upgrading the quality of those equipment and therefore providing the U.S. a very unique competitive edge in the global competition against Russian and Chinese and British and French and Swedish and German and other manufacturer of defense equipment. It's a win-win type of relationship.
Right.
We get, therefore, better systems from the U.S., but the U.S. prevails in the international competition to a large extent because of that Israeli laboratory. And the same thing applies to commercial industry. Whether you are Intel or Motorola or Marvel or Cisco or Apple or Google or Facebook, once again, Israel serves as the second most important research and development center, second only to the U.S., and we have become the most important pipeline of cutting-edge technologies, which starts in Israel and ends in the Silicon Valley and other centers in the U.S., feeding the American high-tech industry, which employs millions of people and sustains its global competitive edge, largely again because of the very intimate cooperation between the senior partner U.S. and the junior partner Israel, which join forces basically following the Texas colloquialism, two guns shoot longer than one.
Unless you're using a tabor. So, you know what, sir? That's some great stuff because, you know, let's go back. In this segment, we have about a minute left, and I want to come back and talk about the boldness that Islam has created in the United States for itself. They don't any longer need suicide bombers. The Muslim Brotherhood starting their own political party in Washington, D.C. And
it seems to me that the U.S. should be very, very careful not to repeat the dramatic errors committed by the Europeans who are going through cultural and military suicide. Rather than repeating the mistakes, the U.S. should avoid that Islamic-oriented mistake.
Yeah, we'll be right back. This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Ganot. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Of what's coming. I have vowed that while I love my country, I am loyal to my countrymen. I am loyal to my Constitution and my Bill of Rights. That's it. I'm saying this as Michael Ganot in Insight to Israel. We are only loyal. I am only loyal. I'm one person. I'm only loyal to those who adhere to the Constitution. And I don't care who it is in the United States. If you do not adhere to a God-fearing, Judeo-Christian valued, and established Constitution and Bill of Rights, then I'm not loyal to you. In fact, not only am I not loyal, I am in direct opposition to. It's one thing to sit and say you're not loyal and then do nothing, but to be in direct opposition to, actively, is something altogether different. And I say that with regard to the fact that, look, there's a lot of countries that are an ally to Israel. I say a lot. There's not many. And because you're,
in fact, there's only one effective ally of Israel, and that's the USA.
Well, let me ask you that. You know what, sir? I don't mean to contradict you because you're a much wiser, more intelligent man than I am. But I'm going to tell you, since I'm an American, I can say it. I have a problem with any money going to Islam. Any. We are funding Syria. We're training, the CIA's training those rebels there who want to kill Jews, who want to wipe Israel off the face of the map. We cut off funding to Egypt, and so Egypt then picked up a contract with Mother Russia, who's trying to, whose pride has been hurt by the fall of the Soviet Union. And so to regain that pride, they're looking to take back what was once thought to be theirs in their mind. And they collaborate, which now China and Russia have a pipeline, an oil pipeline, and they're doing business as far as energy goes. And they help out Iran. But the United States is, we give money to all these Muslim countries thinking that they're going to be our friend. Now, if I have to pay somebody to be my friend, they're not my friends.
Well, again, we have to be realistic. A single human being is infallible.
Right.
By definition, being human being means that you are fallible, because there is only one entity which is infallible,
and that's God.
And that's God. And similarly,
if we're not the smartest guys in the world, at least we're smart enough to know that.
Well, we should be, unless you're a person devoid of humility. It requires a certain humility to realize that one is infallible. But the same thing applies to nations, and definitely, same thing applies to leaders. Leaders, by definition, are fallible. Nations, by definition, are fallible. Yes, Israel, the Jewish state, has had its share of mistakes.
Right.
The U.S. has had its share of mistakes. But relatively speaking, when you observe the history of humankind, recent history as well as ancient, when you observe the current atmosphere in the world, there's no doubt in my mind that the only viable, vital, effective ally of the U.S. is of Israel is the U.S. Bearing in mind that the U.S. Is a country which is not does not follow the monarchy as its political system. In the U.S., the constituent constitutes the chief axis of the political system. In the U.S., the legislature is co-equal and co-determining to the executive. In fact, according to the Constitution, the legislature is Article 1 and the executive is only Article 2. And there is a reason why the legislature and not the executive is the opening article of the Constitution. In that respect, the American constituent, the population at large, and the American legislature have always been systematic allies of the idea of a Jewish state before there was a modern Jewish state established in 1948, and certainly they have been systematic allies of Israel since 1948. Every single public opinion poll shows that Israel is one of the most appreciated, supported states by the American people, and everyone who follows Capitol Hill knows that the House and the Senate feature some 75% support of Israel on any given vote, any day of the year. And the reason for that, in my mind, are three. We have mutual threats facing us, right, especially now. We have joint interests directing us, economic and defense. But most importantly, both the U.S. and the Jewish state are based on shared values, Judeo-Christian values.
Right.
And those values have their roots, as far as the U.S. is concerned, in the 17th century with the arrival of the Arabella and the Mayflower. As far as the Jewish state, it has its roots 4,000 years ago,
right,
when our patriarch Abraham started monotheism and started the presence in our homeland. And that, I believe, has made the U.S.-Israel covenant, not just alliance,
wow, that's a good word,
into a unique relationship, which in recent years has also been transformed into win-win, two-way street, which is mutually beneficial type of relationship.
Let me ask you. You've spent a lot of time in the States. You travel there still to the States.
Well, six times a year.
Where's your cowboy boots at?
Well, they're being shined now.
Nice. Let me ask you. Like myself, but you were much deeper involved in politics in Washington. How would you weigh? Because I see it personally. Like, let me revert back to Hershey's for Heroes and the commander. What did you?
The major.
The major, who said, "How do the American people view us?" Now I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say it. The United States government overall is not a good ally to Israel, and I'll tell you why. Number one, first and foremost, because we're aiding and abetting Israel's enemies, Islam, and we're forcing you to into a false tada. Wow, the Crown Plaza is great. We're doing a recording for a radio show, Insight to Israel.
Yes.
And which is heard all over the United States, Europe, and here in the Jewish state. And you've got a great place here at the Crown Plaza.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So thank you for your hospitality,
You're
too.
You're welcome. Anytime.
So we cannot abate... We cannot aid and abet the enemies, not only the enemies of the Jewish people, but the enemies of God himself. But when he asked me that, you know what I was proud to say? What I was proud to do? Hold up that chocolate bar and say, you see the note? This is how Americans feel. Forget the government. I'm going to tell you what, sir. I'm saying it as American. We're corrupt to the core. We are godless. We are godless. Not everyone in the government is, but I lived in Washington, D.C. You did also, and I don't know the exact dates, but I can give you currently, the Republican Party is not the voice of the grassroots of the conservative right-wing Christian any longer. It is just not. Now, with that being said, my session, and I'd like yours for at the time you lived and what you see current day. And it's all right if it contradicts mine. I'm not here to get along to go along. How would you assess, when you look over the years that you've lived here and in the United States, when you weigh the American people, the grassroots, in comparison with the U.S. government, who has done more and shown more love to Israel historically, would you say?
Well, certainly when it comes to the American people, as I said before, there has been systematic support for the reconstruction of the Jewish Commonwealth on the land or in the land of Israel. House especially and Senate have always followed that line of thinking. This has not been the conduct, unfortunately, of American presidents of the tenants of the White House. However, we have to be, again, realistic.
Right.
Compared with any other country in the world,
right,
the U.S. has been way, way ahead of the pack.
Absolutely.
When it comes to joining, supporting, embracing, identifying with the Jewish state, which has benefited the U.S. while benefiting Israel as well.
Do you think I'm too harsh?
Yes. You're way, way too too harsh. Because we have to be realistic. In a few days, next week, in fact, we're going to celebrate the Pentecost holiday.
Right.
The star of the Pentecost holiday, obviously, was Moses.
Right.
Moses, we know.
Shavuot. It's called Shavuot in Hebrew.
Shavuot, right.
Yeah, Shavuot.
Moses, as we know, was fallible because of his sins, because of his missteps. He was punished severely. He could not enter the promised land. So if Moses, the number one lawgiver in human history, the number one military leader, or one of the top military leaders in human history, one of the top political leaders in human history, probably the number one freedom fighter in human history, inspiring many, many freedom movements, national freedom movements all over the world. If Moses committed erroneous acts, who are we, Americans or Israelis, to be so harsh about ourselves by defining ourselves as faulty, unworthy because of some mistakes? But again, especially it's true about the American people, because unlike the Europeans, when some presidents or prime ministers are semi-monarch, in Israel as well, a prime minister is a semi-monarch. In the U.S., there is no semi-monarchy, there is no full monarchy. We shall remember in November is a statement which reverberates all over Capitol Hill and in every office on Capitol Hill. Senators and House members dread constituents. They dread the coming election date. This is not something which you see in any other free society in the world. Luckily, fortunately, the centerpiece of the American democracy is also the centerpiece of the covenant between the U.S. and Israel. There's no doubt in my mind that if it would have been up to American presidents only and the Department of State only, U.S.-Israel relations would not be as intimate as they are today. They are that intimate because this has been the will of the American people.
I'll give you
one example. Missile defense. This is one of the most elaborate areas of U.S.-Israel cooperation, at least since the late 1980s. almost every year, an American president submits a budget for U.S.-Israel cooperation in the area of missile defense, and then the Congress is upping that budget. And the reason is, if you talk with the mavens of missile defense on the House side or the Senate side, is because the American legislators and American experts have become more and more cognizant of the very unique benefits to America's national security through cooperation with Israel. And the reason for that unique benefit has to do, number one, with Israel's unique experience in the Middle East, which has transformed it into a battle-tested laboratory, and number two, the unique brain power which exists in Israel when it comes to defense technologies as well as commercial technologies.
Yeah, well, you know what, sir? I do appreciate your thoughts on the matter, and I think you're absolutely correct. The relationship with Israel has been forged because of the will of the people.
Absolutely.
My personal assessment is, I monitor the news on a global scale almost 24/7. I live off about 4 to 6 hours sleep a night, 7 days a week.
That's about 4 or 6 more than you should. So much is awaiting you. How can you afford to have 4 to 6 hours of sleep at night?
I just, you know what? I feel a necessity to bring to the great understanding, as we find ourselves in the United States, in cultural demise. And I say that with regard to the facts. As much as folks want to disagree and kick and scream and holler and fight, the facts are, look, God's in control. And when you oppose God and his laws, you'll pay a very dear price. We're seeing catastrophic events take place all over the United States as far as the weather. Some people are not able to connect the dots because they live in their own bubble, in their own world, where they worry about their own situations, understandably. But it's amazing to see what has happened in the United States, standing from afar. And we have the NSA that's spied right now on Facebook. They're watching me. I don't have any choice in the matter. But Facebook has combined forces with NSA using facial recognition.
Well, then you become much more productive because you also educate the NSA.
That was very eloquent, the way you put it.
Well, it's the reality.
I hope and pray to God that we make it another election. Because if we continue on the path that we're on, fiscally, on a cultural level, and in our relationship with Israel, because God will not bless us if our leadership is putting Israel in a corner. If we are forcing you to conspire or to make an agreement with murderers, that would be Mahmoud Abbas, who's openly signed the paper to have Jews killed, who's given the direction. And yet, I really, I'm not a head of state.
Well, you know, you mentioned Mahmoud Abbas, the chairman of the Palestinian Authority, who has been embraced by the White House, embraced, cultivated, financed by the Department of State, the U.S.,
yeah.
The number one financial supporter of Mahmoud Abbas. A few weeks ago, Mahmoud Abbas gave a speech and once again, heralded the former religious Muslim leader of Jerusalem, the Mufti Haj Amin El Husseini, as a martyr, as a hero. Now, people should realize what does it mean, because that Mufti...
Now, is this the Mufti that runs the temple now?
Well, that's the current one.
Okay.
But the one he heralded as a martyr and as a hero, world, calling upon Palestinians to follow in his footsteps, was the chief Arab collaborated with Nazi Germany.
Wow.
That was the Mufti who in 1941 visited Hitler and
I've seen that picture.
And shared with Hitler a memorandum asking Hitler to assist his own attempt to replicate the final solution to the Jewish presence in Europe, also in the Middle East, including in Israel. This is the same Mufti who in 1941-42 already had plans for crematoria being constructed in the West Bank, in the Samaria area, northern West Bank, right next to the city of Nablus, in order to decimate Jewish presence in the area, just the way the Nazis did that.
Wow.
And more than that, it is Mahmoud Abbas who not only heralds that Nazi collaborator, but he is the one who appointed the current Mufti, Muslim religious leader in Jerusalem, who is in the habit of referring to Jews in the area as a target for annihilation, referring to the Jewish state as an entity which must be erased from the earth, and who is behind daily hate education incitement against Jews. And that is Mahmoud Abbas, who gets from the U.S. annually $400 million, which are directly responsible for funding hate education. Now, certainly the U.S. administration and no U.S. legislator would tolerate hate education in the U.S. But here, not only do they tolerate hate education by the Palestinian Authority, they also fund it. And by doing that, they fuel Palestinian terrorism, because there is no more effective line of manufacturing of terrorism than hate education.
Right. Wow. And you know what? The American people ought to be ticked off. And the fact that we're saying this and telling this truth, I've said it before, and I'm glad it's coming from you, because our tax dollars are gone. You know, when I hear people say, we need to stop, I've had Jews in the United States, self-haters, tell me, we shouldn't be giving money to Israel, the oppressor. And I'm thinking to myself, how much money do we really give Israel?
By the way, the U.S. does not give any money to Israel. The U.S. invests in Israel.
Ah, and for so that, there's a difference.
Oh, big time difference. Because the question is there any return for that investment, annual investment, which is highly, highly appreciated, but it has to be put in the proper context.
Thank you.
It's not foreign aid, irrespective of the title chosen by the American Congress or the administration, because the fact is that in return for that investment, American defense industries get hundreds of upgrades every single year, which worth billions of dollars to the American defense industry. Because of the Israeli-driven enhancement of American defense systems, which we use in Israel, U.S. defense industry expands employment, increases exports, and enhances research and development. The F-16, manufactured by General Dynamics in Fort Worth, Texas, has benefited to the tune of well over 700 upgrades due to a team of Israeli Air Force men stationed at the plant which manufactured the F-16, and on a daily basis they share with the manufacturer lessons drawn by the Israeli Air Force. The same benefits also are accrued by McDonnell Douglas in Missouri, which manufactures the F-15, and the same benefits those manufacture tank, American tank, the Abrams, or the helicopters, or the night navigation, well over 1,000 military systems, which produce benefits way, way beyond the $3.1 billion, which is invested in Israel annually by the U.S. You add to that the benefits to the American high-tech, commercial high-tech industry. You add to that the benefits which are provided by Israel through intelligence. You add to that the benefits provided by Israel's posture of deterrence, which has become the number one life insurance policy of Arab allies of America, such as the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia, the Sheikh Sabah family in Kuwait, and others who rely more and more on Israel as a posture of deterrence which guarantees their survival. Right. And then you get the notion, why is it that U.S. and Israel are involved in investment in Israel rather than foreign aid, which is basically handout.
Right.
We are not involved in a one-way street. This is a two-way street, which is mutually beneficial to the U.S. as well as to Israel.
You know, I'm glad you... Wow, that was very well said, because I get tired of these folks saying this. So basically what you're telling me is the U.S. gives you pasta that it already made, and you throw in the spices and share it.
Well, it's not only the spices.
Is it, can I put it, make it that simplistic?
No,
you put in the vegetables, the peppers and the cucumbers. And
we don't need any metaphor. We purchased from, or we received from the U.S. the funding to buy the original F-16, but since that original, which we bought with American money,
right,
we have caused, for instance, the production of a new F-16, which includes cockpit 50% developed by or through Israeli modifications. Firing control, 75% is...
So you just make it better.
Has been upgraded by Israeli modification. We're talking about robots manufactured by Northrop Grumman in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which are upgraded on a daily basis by Israeli lessons. Those are robots which neutralize explosives. Unfortunately, we use them on a daily basis,
right,
on Israeli streets. But we share the lessons with the manufacturers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and therefore the plant in Chattanooga is exporting much more than it did when we originally bought the robots. As a result, the plant in Chattanooga employs that many more employees, and as a result, the research and development of Northrop Grumman has been severely, dramatically enhanced through, again, the battle-tested Israeli laboratory, which is at the service of only one country in the world, the USA.
Wow. So, wow, that's... Yoram, you've given us a plethora of truth and nailed it down to the ground. At the end of the day, I have to say, I'm going to say it, if it weren't for the Jewish state, where would I be?
There's no such thing as plethora of truth. There's only one truth.
Okay.
And truth in Hebrew, which we in Hebrew is emet, consists of three letters. The first letter in the alphabet, the middle letter of the alphabet, and the last letter of the alphabet. Aleph, Mem, Tav. Why? Because there is no such thing as part of the truth, most of the truth. There's only one truth.
Wow.
And that's comprehensive.
That's awesome. Sir, I want to say thank you for being on the show again, and thank you for all the times you've contributed. We're going to have you on again next month. This is Michael Gineau with Insight to Israel. Yoram Edinger.
Thank you very much.
And God bless the United States of America and those who fight for freedom, for Judeo-Christian principles, for the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Everyone else, I got no love. But, and God bless Israel in her fight for sovereignty and security.